This is Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now here's Gary and Rob. Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, which recently celebrated the grand opening of its all-new golf course. The rebirth of this historic course is now available for both members and non-members and located conveniently between Milwaukee and Madison in the beautiful rolling hills of Oconomowoc. See what all of the talk is about with this remake of one of the oldest courses in the state and test your game with native fescue, undulating greens, and Scottish roots. Book your tee time today at clubatlaclabelle.com. This voice is Rob Hernandez. That voice you're about to hear is Gary D'Amato, and we are just coming down from the high of a major championship over the weekend. No, I'm not talking about the PGA Championship. It's Gary D'Amato in the D'Amato Open. Shoot 73 from the goals of Muskego Lakes. Ladies and gentlemen, we got to get this man an exemption into the MFAM Championship.
Yeah, 5,500 yards, probably about 1,700 yards shorter than the real golfers played at TPC Hardy Park, Rob. So it was a good day. It was a fun day, but let's leave it at that because the score is meaningless.
The score is meaningless. Well, and unfortunately, it kept you from, what I felt was probably the most exciting major championship round in a long, long time. The PGA Championship won by Colin Morikawa, 23-year-old from out here in California. And Gary, at various points during the broadcast, once on the front nine, once on the back nine for sure, when they flashed the graphic, there were six guys tied for the lead. I believe that number at one point in the back nine grew to seven. What a great championship. And again, we're in a pandemic and yet golf goes on, and it went on in a way that I thought really spoke well for the game. And with the way that this leaderboard unfolded and for the winner to come from this younger age group, I tell you, there's this major championship season that we're about to embark on. It's got my attention.
Yeah, you know, although I was playing golf, we were on our phones looking at updates constantly, looking at the scoreboard and commenting on how many guys had a chance to win and how many guys were tied for the lead. Rob, it seems like every week every other week anyway, there's another young player that steps forward and does something spectacular. This week it was Colin Morikawa. We've seen Bryson DeChambeau, what he's done. We've seen Matthew Wolff and Victor Hovland. Speaks well for the future, the immediate future of the game. And it gets me excited, really pumped up about the Ryder Cup next year, because I think Steve Stricker, our captain, is going to have some interesting choices to make with all these young kids playing so well.
He sure does, and we'll talk about that in a minute, because Steve Stricker reached out to Colin Morikawa, and they played a practice round early in the week. But you look at some of the names that made an impact. Jason Day, he's been fighting back problems and was right there till the end, a guy who won at Whistling Straits, and it was nice to see him back in the mix.
Yeah, absolutely. He's gone through a few caddies lately. I know that, and he's had some health problems. Seems like Jason Day has two problems to me, Rob, over the years that I've followed him. And I remember him, as an aside, you know, I covered the first PGA Tour event he played in, which was the John Deere Classic years ago. And then I think the next week he came and played in the GMO on a sponsor's exemption and had a pretty good week. He was, I don't know, 18 or 19 years old at the time. But it seems like, and I think he's admitted this, he at times has suffered from a little bit of a lack of motivation when he's gotten to number one in the world, and when he's won tournaments, he's sort of gone backwards for a while. And he's even talked about how he has a hard time staying motivated. And then, of course, the injury thing. He's had a number of injuries, and the back being the latest. So good to see him up on the leaderboard, and hopefully he has a good run of the next upcoming major championships here.
And another guy near and dear to both of us because of his ties to the Greater Milwaukee Open is Tony Finau. And he didn't do anything to lose the PGA Championship over the weekend, Gary, other than maybe parring 16 on Sunday, the hole that Colin Morikawa eagled to give himself some breathing room. Finau put his drive behind a tree, had to punch onto the green, and then two-putted for par. Again, this guy is going to break through soon, and it's one of these guys that I feel when he starts to win, it's going to be hard to turn off the faucet.
Yeah, I agree. He's got every facet of the game. He's one of the longest guys out there. He's got a really good short game for a guy with that much power, kind of like Dustin Johnson in that way. And I think you might be right, Rob. I think if he can win one of these majors, he might win a couple more. But, boy, he's had a hard time breaking through with only one tour win for all that talent. You know, he probably should have won more than he's won at this point, and I think he'd be the first to tell you that.
The way the PGA Championship was set up over the weekend, I loved it. I mean, we've got some low scoring. Obviously, a 64, 6-under par by Colin Morikawa wins it yesterday with a 13-under total. I don't think 13-under is a bad total. I love the fact that you could drive a par 4 late in the game, and then you had a par 3, you know, late in the game, and then, you know, a tough par 4 18th hole with that green kind of tucked around, you know, this little nest of trees along the perimeter of the course. I thought the TPC at Harding Park was a wonderful venue for this championship.
Yeah, and the way the PGA of America approaches its setups with Kerry Haig, the championships officer in charge of setting up the course, you know, they don't do anything to trick up a golf course. They give the players, I think, a fair, challenging test. And I don't think they're bothered if the winning score is even par or 15 under. I don't think it really matters much to the PGA of America who, what the winning score is, as long as it produces obviously a worthy champion, which it does every year. And this year in particular, 23 years old, boy, Colin Morikawa has such a bright future.
And we mentioned too, we might be seeing Colin Morikawa at the Ryder Cup next year at Whistling Straits in Haven. He moves from 10 to 3 on the list, almost, again, we're resetting and continuing the points. That was announced last week. Captain Steve Stricker will continue to have 6 captain's picks, so 6 make it on points. The 6 right now in that top 6, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Colin Morikawa, Justin Thomas, Bryson DeChambeau, and Webb Simpson. That's a pretty solid 6. You've got some big hitters in there. You got a great putter in Webb Simpson, and you got 2 young guys in Justin Thomas and Colin Morikawa who have, I think, the complete game. They're not all based on how far they can hit the ball. And then you've got a whole lot of options beyond that. But let's start with Morikawa. He played a practice round with Steve Stricker on Tuesday. Stricks reached out to him and you know, a while back to set this up. I think it says a lot about how much fun Steve Stricker's having trying to get to know this group because, as you said, Gary, the cast of characters just keeps changing.
It does. And we've got another year coming here, Rob, where it's going to continue to change. But I really believe that these young players we're talking about, Colin and some of the other guys that we mentioned earlier, I really believe they're going to be there, you know, in 12 months. And Steve's going to have some really interesting choices between veterans and young guys, between guys who have Ryder Cup experience, and guys who have none. And it looks like it's going to be a Bombers team, which is going to be, I think, really interesting to see how Steve sets up, you know, Whistling Straits for his team. I could definitely see him narrowing the landing areas at 290, where a lot of the Europeans will be landing their drives, and, you know, widening them at 315, where some of the Americans will be hitting their drives. So all that's really going to be interesting to watch over the next 13 months here.
Phil Mickelson's made a pretty significant move up the Ryder Cup points list. He's now at 22. He was 33 a week ago and, you know, had a great showing at the WGC event in Memphis. I don't think we can count him out. And again, we're talking about clusters of guys. We've got Tiger and Phil. We've got, Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, maybe Jordan Spieth in that group, Ricky Fowler, if he can get it going in the bigger events finally at some point. And then you get, you know, the Tony Finau, Xander Schauffele, you know, some of these guys that either have burst onto the scene a while back and have taken some time to kind of, you know, find their game. Or guys that maybe, if we go back to the U.S. Open at Erin Hills that we were introduced to, like Schauffele, it's just amazing, these clusters of guys that keep coming out. And I like where the U.S. golf is at right now.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's going to be a very, very strong Ryder Cup team. Europe's going to be good too, though. I mean, you know, their top 4 or 5 players are as good as America's top 4 or 5 for sure. I think maybe where Steve Stricker might have an advantage is in the depth of his team. I think his, you know, 10 through 12 players are going to be really, really strong, where Europe's might be a little bit iffy. But look, Rob, we've both seen what's happened in past Ryder Cups when the same scenario unfolded and we had a Thomas Peters stepping up and having a great Ryder Cup and guys like that. So, you know, you can never discount Europe in this thing. Obviously, you know, they've been the better Ryder Cup team now for 16, 18 years. So the Americans are going to have their hands full, but I think it's going to be a great team.
European Ryder Cuppers that might be at Whistling Straits, who fared well at TPC Harding Park. Paul Casey, a runner-up finish. And Justin Rose, a top 10 finish. He finished ninth. John Rahm, not too far off the pace, and he's always a factor. So, yeah, I to your point, Gary, we've got some pretty good guys on that European side. Another guy that had an interesting tournament was Alex Noren, got in as the last alternate, and had Wisconsin's Austin Gaugert out of Lake Geneva on the bag. Austin, of course, is caddy for Casey Danielson and Jordan Niebrugge. And Austin got on the bag of Alex Noren. Of course, Austin's brother Alex caddying for Eric Van Royum, a former Gopher, Minnesota Gopher teammate of Alex's. And both of those duos did quite well. It was as fun to watch where the caddies were on the leaderboard. We also had John Turcotte on the bag of Sepp Straka. Turcotte witnessed a hole-in-one yesterday by Ben Ahn. And then Mario Tiziani caddying for Steve Stricker, who didn't make the cut. So it was exciting, Gary, to be able to watch the PGA Championship again.
Do you think Austin Gaugert, is that going to be a long-term thing now with Alex Noren? Or is that, do you think he just stepped in on a week basis here?
I'm wondering if that's on a week-to-week basis. I haven't had a chance to talk to Austin about that, but being that Alex Noren was a last-minute entry into the PGA, and with all the travel restrictions, I'm not sure how much Alex has played stateside here in 2020. So that may have been a one-off, but they certainly clicked. It was except for the third round where Alex kind of went backwards, and it was weird because the third round, he was still, top 15, but there was a scoring glitch that made it on Twitter where he disappeared entirely from the leaderboard and from the pairings for the final round. And people are wondering, what's become of Alex Noren? But he was there, and he shot 67 the final day. Gary, one thing I wanted to ask about is the way we watch major championship golf. I got a call on Thursday from my daughter asking if we should get ESPN Plus. I said, why? She goes, well, the tournament's not going to be on ESPN until it was 1 o'clock my time. So I think it was like 3 o'clock your time. And I'm going, well, yeah, let's do it. Boy, what a bargain. $5 for the month. And we got to watch as much tournament golf as we could possibly get. It also gets you access to those feature groupings. I'm not here to shill for ESPN Plus, but, it was a better experience than I thought. And then I went from ESPN Plus to ESPN, and then on the weekend on to CBS. A little bit different, a little bit inconvenient, but we're starting to watch TV differently with all the streaming stuff. I'm starting to come around to ESPN Plus. I was wondering, how did you watch the PGA, and are your viewing habits different now with major championship golf?
Well, I didn't subscribe to ESPN Plus for the month. I know they had that deal out there. So I caught some of it on ESPN, and then I watched quite a bit Saturday, CBS's broadcast, and didn't see much Sunday because I was playing golf. But you're right, viewer habits are changing. I went on Morning Read this morning, and I saw quite a few in the reader's mailbox. There's several complaints about, having to subscribe to ESPN Plus to get that early coverage of the PGA Championship. But you're right, Rob. That's the way of the future. I think there's going to be more and more of this targeted pay-as-you-go, or pay for a month, or subscribe to one of these services, and you'll get blanket coverage of these major championships. And I think, while some people might complain about it right now, I think it's going to be eventually the accepted way to watch golf tournaments and a lot of other things.
And I've got to do my homework. I have no idea if they're going to be the one. I think that's part of the new package, if I'm not mistaken, that ESPN Plus gets most of the streaming stuff early. And I think they took it away from the NBC Gold package, which had a better, flow with being part of the Golf Channel NBC family. But, it was fun to watch fun to listen to different voices. Scott Van Pelt is great on golf. And, of course, if you don't have the ESPN Plus, you got to hear him and see him on the ESPN coverage. And, of course, he and Andy North have been friends forever, the two-time U.S. Open champ from Madison. They're like walking into a bar and hearing them, call golf. It's just good conversation. I love them as much on the wrap-up shows as I do, when they're on the course and with live broadcast. That's fun to watch that duo together.
It is. It's a very comforting and familiar duo. We've heard them for a long time now. They work off each other very good. Scott Van Pelt is very good on golf, I think. One of the better guys out there. And he's very straightforward in his delivery and what he has to say, but it's always good. And I think those guys work very well together.
Well, again, fun time here to be able to watch Major Championship Golf. We're hitting now the last event of the PGA Tour regular season is this week with the Wyndham Championship. And then, Gary, we go to the playoffs. Did we say playoffs? It doesn't seem like it's time for the playoffs already, but it is time for the playoffs. And then we get more majors after that. Your thoughts on what's left, especially if we don't have college football to watch. I mean, again, professional golf may continue to be the only meaningful game in town.
Ratings have been through the roof on PGA Tour golf. I think the PGA Tour has to be, and the networks have to be very happy with sort of a captive audience with not much else sports to write. Of course, baseball is going now and the NBA's back in action. It's just so weird, Rob, with a 60-game baseball season and games being canceled and postponed by COVID and the NBA trying to make it through, you know, playoffs in a bubble without having a big serious outbreak of COVID. It's just really strange what's going on, but it's good to see that golf. I believe there were not a single positive COVID test last week with the PGA Championship.
Right.
So whatever they're doing, the PGA Tour seems to be doing the right thing here.
And then after this week, the Northern Trust in Boston, the BMW Championship in our backyard at Olympia Fields in just outside of Chicago, and then the Tour Championship is September 4th through the 7th. A little bit of a delay in the compared to the original dates, but they're getting it done. And then the U.S. Open, not too far after that, September 17th through the 20th, and then you get the Masters in November. A great way to end the year. We're hoping that the rest of the world kind of catches up to golf, and we keep getting better news about testing. And before we kind of wrap up on the professional part, a lot of what's going to come forward here, Gary, I think hinges on what other sports are doing for better or worse. And there's been a lot of talk over the weekend about whether with the Mid-America Conference, the MAC canceling football, the domino effect that'll have on sports in our country. There's talk about will the Big Ten continue to play football this fall as planned? They release the schedule next week. And it's weird to be talking football here, Gary, but I maintain that there is a direct correlation between what other sports are doing and what sports like golf can do. I don't think anything's going to jeopardize what golf's doing right now, but whatever happens, outside of that realm can only enhance the product and what we're seeing to this point.
Yeah, Rob, you're right about that. And one thing that really concerns me is that I thought when the outbreak happened back in mid-March, I thought that science and medicine would have sort of a handle on it by the end of the year, but it doesn't seem like that's going to happen now. And I'm starting to worry about spring sports. I'm starting to worry about football being played in the spring and then, we get to spring and they can't play in the spring and we lose an entire year of a lot of major college sports and we just miss a year. I'm starting to really be concerned about that, but the one thing is golf seems to be doing it right. There have been very few positive tests. The testing has been very good on the PGA Tour, and I just hope it continues and we get through these remaining major championships this year, the U.S. Open and the Masters, without losing significant players in the field.
Well, you touch on a great point, too, because we've already lost Division II, Division III college golf for the fall semester. Every conference has either postponed it. I think the Minnesota Division III conference is going to try to play some form of smaller competitions in the fall, but nothing, in terms of a championship. I'll be tracking whether the high schools go forward with it. The WIA meets on Friday to review their plans to launch everything starting Monday with girls golf. And from an initial survey I sent out over the weekend, there are a lot that are planning to go ahead, at least with conference competitions up until the conference championship. So duels, triangulars, smaller stuff that they can manage and see how that goes. But to put a bow on this conversation, Jim Harbaugh put out a statement here this afternoon with in relation to COVID testing at the University of Michigan program to try to, plead for, the Big Ten administrators to think long and hard. There were, I believe, in double-digit numbers, 11 to 20 COVID positive tests when they got to camp. And then there were four the first week or two of camp, and there have been none since in the last 352 tests. So again, depending on what numbers you look at, you know, there's as many reasons to go forward as there are not. And but I think to your point, Gary, until we get a vaccine, it's going to be discretion being the better part of valor. It's hard to be patient, though, isn't it?
It sure is. Yeah, I'm everyone is hoping. I guess there's a vaccine in trial right now. That's a couple thousand people have volunteered for this trial. And, you know, let's hope that, Rob, that they can nail down a vaccine and that it can be distributed and, you know, by the millions, which is going to need to be to get everyone vaccinated in our country quickly. And I'm hopeful that by spring that we're sort of semi back to normal, but you hear things, and we can get into the medicine of this, and probably not, it's not right for this podcast, but you hear Dr. Fauci saying, you know, this is going to be around forever, and, you know, we might not get a handle on it for years, and it's scary stuff. But you're right. We have to almost play it day by day with sports to see what's happening and make decisions on that basis.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we've got more golf coming up this week that we're going to get to in a second, but not before I tell you that Talking.Golf is sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, which recently celebrated the grand opening of its all-new golf course. Now, the golf course has been around forever, but its current carnation, 2 years in a redesign, and now it's open for members and non-members. Located between Milwaukee and Madison in the beautiful rolling hills of Oconomowoc, you can book your tee time today at clubatlaclabelle.com. Gary, before we get to the tournament activity this week, and it's busy again, we were both busy with some junior golf last week, the WSGA Junior Boys Championship at the Legends Club over at Brandybrook. And again, much like the state amateur the week before, somewhat of a runaway winner over there at Wales.
Yeah, Cameron Huss played great throughout, and the final day he did exactly what he needed to do. He had a gap between him and, you know, the second and third place guys, and he made a lot of pars, didn't make too many mistakes, you know, and sort of won going away. So it was a really good field, and Cameron really impressed me. That's the first time I had a chance to see him play golf, Rob. I think you've seen him play before, but I was impressed. I think the University of Wisconsin is getting a really good one there.
Yeah, credit to Michael Burson. He saw something in Cameron Huss very early, offered early. Offered Cameron Huss, Gary, before he ever qualified for the state high school tournament. Then, of course, he qualifies last year as a junior, and now his senior year got postponed, canceled by COVID, so he never got the chance to go back. And I agree. His star is rising in a big way, and I'm looking forward to seeing what he can accomplish as a Badger. I got to monitor from afar the Sherry Steinhauer Invitational. Day one was at Blackhawk Country Club. Day two over at Pleasant View Golf Course. And, you know, Gary, it's interesting. We have these, you know, preconceived notions, you know, when we look at where tournaments are being held. The Sherry has always been an event that goes to two different courses here the last 3 or 4 years. Blackhawk, as we know, tight and immaculately maintained. A private club, kind of a different form of golf, which is why you see a lot of championships contested there. Great match play course, really good as a stroke play course because you can make a lot of birdies, but you got to be careful that to keep the ball in the fairway. Jenna Anderson of Dousman did that for 2 days, but the thing that impressed me was Pleasant View Golf Course, a great public course on the west side of Madison out there in Middleton. Normally, you know, produces a lot of low scores, and until her score got posted, a 3-under par 69 on the final day, her second 69 of the summer, there weren't many low scores. And again, credit to it was kind of like what we saw last weekend here at the PGA Championship with the opportunity to make birdies, but then also they set up certain holes where, you know, you got to watch what you're doing. And if you if you aren't careful, you're going to have a string of bogeys. Jenna Anderson was able to avoid that. And class of 2022 kid. And she's got, you know, size and strength, and now her mind is starting to kind of wrap, you know, into the package, and she's becoming the complete golfer. And so a big win for her by, I believe, 3 shots. And so some good junior golf being played last week. More junior golf being played this week after one round at the Lake Arrowhead Invitational, the last major on the WPGA Junior schedule. It was Neshota's Nick Ampman. He's a Heartland Arrowhead golfer. He'll be a senior this year. He shot 68 and led by 3 shots. And on the girls' side, freshman to be Jessica Geiser of Heartland with a 73. She leads by one. Gary, hard to believe, weather a factor here on day two. A two-hour rain delay up at Lake Arrowhead. They're finally back on the course, but a lot to be decided here. Points, player of the year points at every level, but here on the junior level with the last major, 450 points to the winner, and a lot can happen. There's only 1 point separating Jenna Anderson from Jessica Geiser in the girls' race, and it's equally as tight between Ty Kretz and Bryson Mercier out of the Upper Peninsula. And so it's kind of fun, isn't it, to see this? You know, it's getting to be fall when we see club championships and we start talking about player of the year races. We're winding near the end of the golf season.
Yeah, it's come about very quick. We still have a lot of great golf to come, but yeah, the end of the season is approaching. I see it. I see it at on the horizon now. I wanted to ask you, Rob. We talked about, you just named four or five golfers from Heartland Arrowhead. Has any school in our state produced more good golfers than Heartland Arrowhead in the last 15 years?
Heartland Arrowhead, no. And Heartland Arrowhead right now in boys and girls golf collectively. You think about Emily Lauterbach now at the University of Wisconsin. And, you know, and a lot of, and obviously Pearson Hunt going to the University of Illinois. The run that they've been on in terms of, you know, premier talent and then, but also collective talent. I mean, you know, Nick Atman, the last time that Arrowhead was at state, was a number three golfer behind, you know, Pearson Hunt and I believe Matthew Robb. And you know, they're great. It reminds me, honestly, Gary, of when I first started covering golf at the Wisconsin State Journal back in the late 80s. And Madison West, the boys and girls programs there were quite strong at that point. Madison West and then Jack Nicklaus's alma mater, Upper Arlington, Ohio, were in this foot race for the most state championships in the nation, you know, having won their state championships. And that was always fun. But, you know, Roger Wiebe was a basketball coach who coached the boys golf in the spring and then would come back after the summer and coach the girls. And he didn't have to do much. And he admitted he wouldn't have to do much. And that's kind of the way it is at Arrowhead. There's so many great junior programs in the suburban Milwaukee area. And between Heartland Arrowhead, Kettle Moraine, Brookfield Central, I'm going to miss a few. Brookfield East is on the rise. Franklin, you know, you just, there's so many great, great programs that make golf in that area so good. But certainly Arrowhead has been the ringleader. And we talk about Brookfield Central and or actually Brookfield, but we also should also mention Milwaukee Marquette, not to be overlooked in that group either. And yeah, we're about to have one of their distinguished alums, Harrison Ott, take to the golf course up at Bandon Dunes Golf Course in Bandon, Oregon. The U.S. Amateur getting underway today. Harrison Ott, Hunter Eichhorn, it's an invitation-only deal. Not easy to get in the field this year because there was no qualifying. Feather in the cap for Wisconsin golf. Hunter Eichhorn out of Marquette and played extensively in the WPGA Junior Tour, as did Harrison Ott. They're in the field. It's a different year, and getting into the U.S. Amateur, no easy task in 2020.
Definitely, Rob. I can't wait to see Bandon Dunes, how that plays out. Great facility, obviously, to host the U.S. Amateur. And then those guys are in the field next week in the State Open at Blue Mountain Golf and Country Club. They've been busy, you know, the Western Am, the U.S. Amateur, and the State Open. Unless, of course, one of those guys wins the U.S. Amateur and then maybe bows out of the State Open. That would be a best-case scenario in more ways than one, I think.
That would mean you're going deep into the weekend up there in the state of Oregon.
Right.
We should also mention, too, that on the docket today, a couple of events up at Ridgeway Golf Club in Neenah. The State Assistance Championship is kicking things off this morning. 36 holes. Got to get the assistants back to work, Gary, so we're going to make them play twice today. And right now, Joaquin Diaz, the assistant pro at Fire Ridge Golf Course in Grafton, and Jake Wisniewski, the assistant pro at Ozaukee Country Club, talking about Arrowhead. Jake Wisniewski, Gary, former Parkside guy, too.
Yeah,
Both tied for the top at 5-under. Blake Jens out of Pleasant View Golf Course in Middleton at 4-under, and Evan Wortgoe, who has won this thing before and gone to the national championship and fared well. He is at 2-under. Michael Higgins out of Blackhawk Country Club, he rounds out the top five. I tell you, we've got some really talented assistant professionals in the state. Joaquin Diaz, a product of the former program over there at Cardinal Stritch, and played for Neil Grusinski, who the defending champion, who can't play in this year, Gary, because he's off coaching golf in Ohio at I believe it's the Ohio U Bobcats that Neil's at. So fun to watch this one unfold, and it's going to be a lot of golf here over the next 12 to 14 hours.
Yes, a small field. I think 29 guys right now in the assistant, but some good talent. And then they're playing concurrently with the Senior PGA Professional Championship, the Wisconsin section Senior PGA. So a lot of golf going on up there, and that's a small field too. But all the really good names are in that field. So you know, Schumann and Eddie and all the guys we've talked about forever, Spangler. It's going to be fun.
Schumann, Eddie, and Sponge. If you send those names to anybody in the WPGA section, they could fill in the full names there, and you might even throw in a Jim Goggert, Goggs, the right. father of the two caddies we were talking about earlier. He's also in the field, and he'll have a go of it this afternoon. That one's a 2-day event extending into tomorrow up there at Ridgeway in Neenah. Also tomorrow, Gary, the last chance qualifier for the event that we can't wait to get here. It's the Wisconsin State Open next week at Blue Mound, and tomorrow's last chance qualifier up at the River Club of Mequon. And the very first tee time, there's a familiar name, Tim Cantwell Jr., a big proponent of getting the residence restrictions relaxed so he could come back from Palm Beach, where he's been for the last 20 or 30 years, former state amateur champion. I'm hoping he gets in the field. It would round out what's going to be a stellar field next week at Blue Mound.
I can't wait, Rob. It's such a good field. I mean, Skip Kendall and Mark Wilson coming back to play. Mark won in 2001. I don't know if he's played since. Skip, of course, won back-to-back state open titles in 88 and 89. That might have been the last time he played. I don't know if he played. Maybe he played in 90. I'm not sure. But it's been probably 30 years for Skip and almost 20 for Mark. And with more than 1,000 PGA Tour starts between them. And then there's so many other great stories with Dan Wiltman going for his third in a row and number five. And the venue is going to be a story. Blue Mound Golf and Country Club, just like Milwaukee Country Club was a couple weeks ago for the State Am. So I just can't wait for next week, Rob. That's going to be a fun 3 days up there at Blue Mound.
Yeah, it sure is. And tomorrow at that last chance qualifier, a couple other guys, Joaquin Diaz is going to be a busy guy. He's going to go try to qualify there. He's in the same group as Jack Blair, a Badger golfer who didn't get through one of the earlier qualifiers. I like the concept, Gary. If you don't make through one, you get a second chance, a mulligan per se. And there's a lot of great. Brian Brodell, who's a former state amateur champion in the field. Max Schmidtke, Sheboygan North kid, who's down at the University of Illinois at Springfield. Division II golfer. Again, we've got a great field already, and it can get even better if we can, sneak a few more guys in here tomorrow. I'm not sure how many berths are on the line, but that'll be fun to look forward to tomorrow. And then, of course, we'll be following the U.S. Amateur all week here, and a couple of our PGA Tour champions golfers have a major this week. It's the Bridgestone Senior Players Championship at Firestone over in Akron. Steve Stricker, Jerry Kelly, I believe, both in the field. Gary, it's a major championship season after one event on the Senior Tour.
this might be the busiest week of tournament golf that we have, Rob. There's golf going on at every single level, from juniors all the way up to the Champions Tour major championships. The next 8-10 days are really going to be exciting. We're going to have a lot to write and talk about.
We sure are. And again, you're listening to Talking.Golf here on Wisconsin.Golf, sponsored by the club at Lac La Belle. Gary, before we wrap things up, chance to look back, look ahead to a few things, what's on the site. You had some interesting stories last week. Let's start first with Charlie Delsman. He keeps making news. He keeps playing good golf at where he's caddying up there at Sand Valley and setting course records. He finally got to the bottom of his latest course record.
Another Arrowhead guy, Rob.
Another Arrowhead
going back
guy.
Away. Going back a ways, but yeah. Yeah, Charlie shoots a 60 at Mammoth Dunes, a 61 at Sand Valley, and a 7-under par 44 at the Sandbox in a 38-day span. Breaks all three course records, although a couple people have gone on Twitter and said and questioned whether they can be official course records if they didn't occur in a competition. I know Charlie's 60 was in a qualifying round for the Caddy Championship. Now, I don't know if that counts as an official tournament, but whether you say it's an official round or not, I mean, 60 and 61 is some pretty good golf. And Rob, I nominated Charlie for Faces in the Crowd for Sports Illustrated, so let's hope we see Charlie's smiling face in Sports Illustrated in an issue or two.
That would be awesome. Yeah. Well, if we drop another Arrowhead reference in this podcast, former coach Greg Bazin's going to send us a few polos and a couple hats, I think. This is getting to be shameful. I don't know. High heat. Tell me that high heat, the golf club has no tie to Heartland Arrowhead.
It does have a tie to Eau Claire Memorial, where the founder of the high heat company, Dean Knuth, went to high school. So it does have a state tie anyway. But yeah, high heat, a smaller golf club manufacturing company. And Dean Knuth, a lot of people know him as the Pope of Slope. He invented the slope system for the USGA and probably is one of the most knowledgeable, probably is the most knowledgeable guy on handicapping in the world. I mean, he came up with the course rating system and the slope system that are in use today throughout America and Canada and Mexico, I believe. But anyway, his company makes golf clubs for handicap players, for amateurs who have trouble, with distance and also hitting out of the rough and hitting from bad lies. His new club has this TGS, this Turf Glider Sole technology. It's a little convex bump on the bottom of the club, kind of similar to what rails were on some of the Cobra clubs that you might have seen years ago. But these clubs really perform well, Rob. I took them to test them at TrackMan Range, John Bowers, at the practice station, John Bowers facility, and the clubs I thought performed very well. They're really good clubs. They're not intended for use by professionals, but for a guy like me, an 11-12 handicapper, they're really helpful. They help my game, I think. And both clubs, both the 3-wood and the hybrid, are going in my bag, Rob.
I like it.
Yeah.
And as we established at the outset, from the gold tees at Muskego Lakes, you don't need any help in your bag, but it never hurts to have the best equipment you possibly can and give yourself a fighting chance from the first tee. So that's good to hear. We've got a lot of stuff coming up this week on the State Open, Gary. I know you're going to look at Mark Wilson and him coming back. And then, of course, Skip Kendall. Skip's done a lot with the junior golfers and the young up-and-coming golfers in the state of Wisconsin. So Skip is, even though he's been in Florida for the last couple decades, he's very much invested in Wisconsin golf, isn't he?
He is, yeah. His home is Milwaukee, Fox Point. He's a diehard Packers fan. I mean, his heart is still in Wisconsin, even though, like you said, he's been in Windermere, Florida now for, boy, it must be 30 years, pretty close to 30 years. And, he's working with some of the younger players in our state. Skip's doing some coaching now. And I'm sure one of the reasons, at least maybe, I've yet to talk to Skip. I'm going to call him hopefully in a day or two here. But I'm sure at least part of the motivation for coming back home and playing the State Open is getting to see some of the guys he's working with up close who are in the State Open field. And, maybe he'll meet with them a little bit and help them a little bit while he's trying to win the championship himself.
And to wrap things up, Gary, you talk about Skip, and he's not been bashful about his wanting to get into coaching. I honestly think all of our former PGA Tour players that are now either on the Champions Tour or winding down their PGA Tour careers would be great coaches. To hear, Steve Stricker go out of his way to play with Colin Morikawa, the way he's kind of, maneuvering as the Ryder Cup captain. And, of course, he's been married to Dennis Tiziani's daughter for, a few decades. And so I'm sure he's gotten an earful about coaching this and coaching that. I mean, he'd be a great coach, I would think.
Well, I think that the greatest evidence of that is that he's one of the few guys that Tiger Woods trusts. I mean, Tiger's gone to him several times over the years to putting, and most recently at the PGA Championship, I think Steve looked at his putting last week. So if Tiger Woods trusts Steve Stricker, I think just about everyone else who plays golf in the world can trust Steve that he'd be a great coach. Jerry would be an interesting coach, Rob. I think if Jerry saw me swing, he'd probably start yelling at me.
Well, I was just going to say, Jerry would bring that hockey coaching mentality to the golf course, I especially if it were a team type of coach, like at the college or high school level, that could get interesting. But boy, fiery! I mean, if you wanted your players to emulate your coach, what a great model to follow, and overachieving as well. I mean, Jerry has certainly gone way above and beyond what anybody ever thought would happen back when he was a junior golfer, and credit to him. But I think, he's got a certain way. He's got, the thing that Jerry Kelly has is accountability, because, the one thing about his ability to keep fighting to be on top of his game is he has accountability in his own game, and I think that's a great quality to have in a coach.
The other quality he has is a tremendous self-belief, Rob. Like you said, you know, probably you wouldn't have picked him when he was 18, 19 years old to do what he's done in golf, certainly. And he even jokes about how he's got a 6-handicap swing when he, you know, when he plays pro-am rounds, and somehow he's able to dial it in when it really counts. And I think if you could put his head on a lot of guys' shoulders, they'd win, you know, they'd win a lot more than they won in their careers, because he has a tremendous self-confidence in himself and self-belief.
Well, we'll continue to speculate as to where these guys would ever end up as a college coach or a high school coach, or who knows, or even just the next Butch Harmon, maybe in the case of Steve Stricker. We'll see. Well, Gary, it's been a pleasure talking golf. We'll do it again next week.
Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
This has been Talking.Golf, sponsored by the Club at Lac La Belle, which recently celebrated the grand opening of its all-new golf course. The rebirth of this historic course is now available for both members and non-members. It's located conveniently between Milwaukee and Madison in the beautiful rolling hills of Oconomowoc. See what all the talk is about with this remake of one of the oldest courses in the state. You can test your game with the native fescue grasses, undulating greens, and Scottish roots. Book your tee time today at clubatlaclabelle.com. We'll talk golf again next week.